because none of us as parents want to impose struggle on our children. We just, I mean, that's just not, that's not what our heart is made up of. But good ones understand that discipline is a part of it, and struggle often is associated to discipline. And if we'll allow our kids to walk through that without rescuing them, more times than not, it's a good result.
From the Atypical Podcast, it's the One Thing series. Discussions with dreamers, doers, thinkers, and catalysts, where they tell their story as well as the one thing that shaped their life or work and made them who they are. What is that belief or epiphany or occurrence in their life that so entrenched itself that it changed their trajectory? I'm Matt Mooney.
And I'm Jenny Mooney.
And this is The One Thing. Today's guest is Kyle Unruh. A little background on Kyle. Kyle rode his motorcycle here to do the interview and then proceeded to tell me why I needed a motorcycle as well. Kyle is a friend of ours. He and his wife, Amy, ran a camp, the actual camp where Jenny and I first met. So he holds a special place in our heart. In fact, Kyle was my boss for my first 4 years out of college in the ministry that Jenny and I were working with called K-Life. We love Kyle. I respect him. And he lives his life in a very intentional way. And so I wanted to get a little time with Kyle to ask him, what was his one thing?
My freshman year, I was in college and I was playing basketball and really immature, and you know, I was a typical 18-year-old that was out on his own now making choices that, you know, when you're 18 and you're finally on your own, if you're going 50-50 on your choices, good and bad, you're probably doing pretty good. Because it's the first time you're really out there, you know, accountable for what you say and do. Yeah. And so I had a really good first semester on the court. And all of a sudden, for whatever reason, I was the starter that got benched. And I got benched for a couple of games. And I'm just a freshman, but I got benched for a couple of games. And it messed with me really bad. And, you know, I was ready to quit. And so I called my dad. And I said, hey, I'm quitting. It was in between. It was the in-between period between first and second semester. But basketball's going on still. And long story short, I said, hey, I'm quitting. My school was about 45 minutes from my home. I didn't have a car, and I was calling him to see if he'd come get me. And he goes, have you talked to your coach? And I said, no. And I'm like, why would I talk to my coach? You know, the mindset of an 18-year-old. And he goes, well, and he's a coach at the time. And he goes, well, after you talk to your coach, call me back. And he hung up on me, which was a brand new experience. So, you know, it took me about 3 hours to get up the nerve to call my coach, because he was a strong, demanding, you know, forceful man. And it took me 3 hours to get up enough nerve to call him. And I did. And, I got through it in about 20 minutes. And then I quickly called him back and said, okay, I called my coach. I told him I was quitting. Will you come get me? He goes, I'll be there in about an hour. And, you know, when I think, because I'm like that now, I'm a little older than he was at the time, and I'm going, I would have hated that phone call. I wouldn't have known what to do if my kid called me and told me that. But at that time, I wasn't thinking that, you know. So he's on his way. He picks me up, and so I'm sure he's kind of scratching his head. What do I do with this? Well, on the ride back home, he informs me that rent is now $75 a month, and he has an interview for me scheduled at a paper manufacturing plant. And so so I was like, I hadn't even thought about the next step, but I guess it's now been determined what my next step is. So I get hired by this paper manufacturing company, and I go from playing college basketball to, you know, spending 8 hours a day in the back of a semi loading boxes of paper all day long into a semi truck until the next one shows up. And, And I spent 4 months. It took me 4 months to realize college was a better gig. And so by the time the next semester had rolled around, I found another school and I was on a basketball team. And that right there showed me a couple things, you know, because none of us as parents want to impose struggle on our children. We just, I mean, that's not what our heart is made up of. But good ones understand that discipline is a part of it, and struggle often is associated to discipline. And if we'll allow our kids to walk through that without rescuing them, more times than not, it's a good result. And somehow intuitively, he knew that, and he put me through that. He allowed me to go through that, and it's had a huge impact in the way I parent my children. Struggle is opportunity, is the way my kids grew up learning. And so, you know, we're going to go through this, and I'm going to help you. I'm going to hold your hand. I'm going to you know, suffer with you if it calls for that. But we are gonna become acquainted with struggle and adversity. And so that's an example of the legacy that gets passed on, and it's beneficial big time.
The funniest part of that story is that it took you 4 months.
I know. I didn't have another plan. And
rent was due.
It has to work in semesters.
Rent was due.
That's right. So
four months later, basketball seems like a great thing. That's sitting right on the bench didn't look so bad
anymore. Not at all.
What is your one thing as you thought about it?
And I did think about it. And knowing your story, you know, I was like, I kind of pieced it together thinking, well, I don't have that. So what do I have? And then I got to thinking about, well, the one thing seems to be the thing that has probably impacted or shaped or molded you the most. And if I were to answer that authentically, then the one thing that shaped and molded me the most was being born into the family that I was born into. And so that one thing would be my mom and dad meeting each other, falling in love, getting married, and raising the family that they had. That my story is a story of legacy. That's what it is. It's just a generational cycle of legacy. And so that's kind of the one thing that I would look at and say that has molded and shaped everything about me. And so when those moments come that might be those one things, I draw from the influence and the impact that those people had on me that were my parents.
Tell me about your childhood, about adolescence, about how you carried that into life, what you did. Obviously, we know each other through some of what you did.
Yeah. So I was the third of five children born to two educators. They were teachers. And so we were raised in a modest kind of setting and environment. And I had two older sisters and two younger brothers. And my dad was a coach. And so sports were introduced into my life and has had a huge impact. You know, it's pretty much been a lot of what my career has consisted of was being involved in athletics and sports and people. You know, my parents both came from intact families. And my parents were married for almost 60 years. My mom passed 6 or 7 years ago. My dad's still living, and they were married for almost 60 years. And so the norm for me is, you know, you come home from school and you play outside and you go sit around a dinner table every single night, and family devotionals every night. And I saw a man committed fully to his wife and to his children, and he lived a very routine life. I mean, it was you wake up early and you go to work and you come home and you spend time with your kids until dinner's ready, and then you go eat together and you hold hands and say your prayer, and you get done with dinner and do a homework and have a family devotional and go to bed every single day, every single night. And so it was a wonderful childhood. I mean, to me, growing up in a locker room, getting to be with around my dad, who was and still is my hero, and spend that kind of time in environments that I really loved, looking up to athletes that I was inspired and impacted by, was a dream, you know, for me. And so, so that relationship, primarily with my dad, because I spent more time with him than I did with my mom, that relationship has been everything to me. I mean, all of my decisions and major decisions and, you know, struggles and moments of adversity always got filtered back through him, you know, when he was mostly aware and more so maybe than he is now. And even though I knew what he would say, it was always important for me to go back and talk to him. And the second piece of that was he demonstrated for me so much of what a man does. I mean, he taught me masculinity and manhood, and it wasn't only the chop wood and build furniture, you know, and kill meat, you know, kind of manhood, but it was compassionate masculinity and masculinity around love. And I mean, it was the full package of what I consider manhood to consist of. And so when I got married and started having children, to me, it was somewhat subconscious. I mean, I just repeated what I watched. And for us, you know, we've had the benefit of the focus on the families and the family lives and ministries that emerged to help us navigate marriage and parenting, unlike they did. But the core of my belief and practice came from watching and listening to him.
Just a quick break in the action. This is the Atypical Podcast. This is our One Thing series. We are talking with Kyle Unruh, who's telling us that the one thing that shaped his life more than any other, the thing that changed the trajectory of his life, is his mom and his dad and the legacy that they provided him. Let's go now to our discussion with Kyle as he discusses how he puts this into practice in his own life.
I remember when Tate, who's my oldest, and he was playing on a little seventh grade basketball team, AAU team, and we were on a road trip, and he came into our hotel room and he said, "Man, Dad, I'm just frustrated that I'm not getting to play more, and I wish I got to play more." And the coach's son had played the same position, so you kind of figure how that's going to play out. And I said, "Well, listen, bud, I'm not going to go talk to him. I think you probably deserve to play more. I think you're a good player, but I'm not going to go talk to him. If you care about it that much, you go talk to him." And so probably about 2 hours later, he comes bouncing in the hotel room, different kid. I go, "What's going on?" He goes, "I went and talked to the coach." I go, "What?" I mean, I just threw it out there like, I'm going to scare you from doing what you think, you know, and
He actually listened.
He did. And he came back and he goes, "Yeah, he told me these two things that I needed to do better, and I'm ready." And that happened. And so, you know, I roll the dice and throw an idea out there or flipped a coin because I didn't know what I was doing. And he did that, and it shaped him. I mean, that would be a moment I think he would look at in his life, because I never went and talked to their coaches. I just kept saying, I reminded him, "You go talk to him. If you don't like your role, or if you don't like what's happening, you go talk to him." Mm-hmm. And you know what he's doing now. That has served him well to be accountable unto himself for his own life.
Yeah, I do know what he's doing, which is playing professional basketball overseas, but just making sure everybody else knows what he's doing. He, you know, unlike maybe some of my children, he went and worked for years on whatever his coach told him. So Tate is a worker and a player and a neat man now. Yeah. Tell me your kid, how many kids you have and their ages.
Yeah, so I know how many kids I have. The ages are going to be a close approximate. Six kids, And two in-laws, so maybe eight kids.
Yeah, it just depends how you... Yeah. That was well done. You've been coached
them.
Well.
I love them. I love them like they're my own. But my oldest is 30. Abby's 30. Tate is 27. Darby's 25. Thatch is 23. Audra's 18. And Carly's almost 17.
And every man listening right now was just walking through that painful experience I just walked you through, because I couldn't do the same, and I got three, and they're
well,
under my roof.
I know I'm give or take a year on all of them.
You know, close enough.
That's right.
Close enough. And you spoke of it just a little bit, but I want you to fast forward to tell us just how you do live that out today. I want you to tell us it with your own kids, and then I also want you just to speak to what you spoke to a little bit. Speaking to the fact that it seems to be, I'm parenting second, third, and fourth graders. Actually, today is the first day of summer break, so I guess I now should start saying third, fourth, mm-hmm. and fifth graders. Yeah. In parenting that, it seems to be that the way that your father introduced you to, walked alongside you in struggle, adversity, seems to be that might be a little bit rarer way. I don't know that that'd be the typical way that we'd be known as a generation of parenters, mm-hmm. That we would probably be known more as the helicopter parents. Mm-hmm. My kid better play, better get the trophy. Yeah. Let me bring the treats and hover. And, you know, I would say, as you speak about sports, I too love sports. However, being a parent of a third, fourth, and fifth grader, I'm loving them less and less every year. Yeah. I'm like, oh my gosh, I never see all of this stuff in any other facet of my life where parents just flip out. You know, not too long ago, we had a baseball parent coach just flipping absolutely out. Jenny and I are just looking at each other. And of course, you know, with Jenny, I'm like, now Jenny, you know, if anything happens, I'm going to be in the middle of it. It's a moth to a flame. I'm not even angry. Just so you know, I'm not mad at anybody. If there's a fight, I'm walking towards it. Right. And this is how I go down. This is my issues in life. I gravitate to the problems. So I just looked at her. I go, if there's a brawl, I'm going to be in it and I'll probably get hurt.
Right.
Like, I hadn't been working out here. There's no muscle behind this mouth. So anyway, how do you, as you assess just kind of our generation and our parenting, you know, how do we live that out? Because I think many of us would say, yeah, we want to totally be the kind of parents that are willing to walk with our kids through adversity. But everything that we do kind of, you know, we tend to keep them from adversity as much as possible. We think that is what parenting should be or look like. So.
Well. That's a great question. And if you'd have asked me 10 years ago, my answer would probably be different. So I'm a grandparent too now. And so I'm watching, you know, a generation that I deeply care about begin that journey of parenting. And I'm still working with kids on a daily basis. So I have a view of your generation raising their children. And the first thing I would tell you is it's apples to oranges. Because raising kids today wasn't the same place that it was 20 years ago when I started raising kids, or 30 years ago when I started raising kids. It's just a different time. And so you have to do it a little bit differently.
Why is that? Why is it a different
time? Well, the world's smaller. You know, when I raised my kids, they knew the kids on the block and in the neighborhood. And we homeschooled for a long time. And that's it. I mean, my kids know kids all over the world now, and they interact with them all over the world. And you know, I was talking with a guy last night, in fact, about parenting and how it's changed so much. And I remember when we integrated our oldest children or mainstreamed them into school, and they came home singing the lyrics of a song that wasn't played in my home. And I thought, oh wow, this is different. How am I going to react now? Because I'm not the singular influence anymore on this child like we were the first 7 or 8 years. And so how are we going to respond to this? I mean, there is a lot coming at them. Okay, well, this would have been in the mid to late 90s. So Is there more coming at our kids now than there was in the mid to late 90s? Absolutely. And so if just the song lyrics of what my daughter heard on a song in school had an impact on me about how am I going to handle this, I can't imagine what it's like being a parent and knowing what's available to your children and figuring out how you get your arms around that and know what's safe and what's not and how you restrict them and how you permit them and all those things. I'm just glad I'm not parenting, you know, in this generation. So with that said, I think there's still some core principles that are not different. You know, we're still human beings made up of body, mind, and soul, and we have to think and use our brains and use our hearts and figure out how we're going to treat people and respond to people. And so there's still some things that are the same. And the other thing that I know, and this is a personal belief, is that I live in a broken and fallen world, and I can't shelter my kids completely from that broken and fallenness that surrounds them. And so if I don't prepare them to deal with broken and fallenness in their own life by allowing struggle and walking through and allowing some suffering, then I have not done the best I can as a parent in preparing them for not being a child anymore. I mean, they're gonna be husbands and wives themselves one day. And if they haven't figured out and learned how to walk through struggle and adversity, then we haven't done our job as parents. Now, that said, that's so hard to do. I mean, who wants to watch their children suffer? Who wants to watch their children struggle? None of us do. Mm-hmm. I never enjoy that. And I still watch it today. Mm-hmm. You know, whether I got two in high school and one in college and the rest are out. And they're still, you know, they still see struggle all the time. And it bothers me every time. I want to go rescue them all the time. But that's not, to me, that's not the right answer. The answer is to go help process with them through the struggle and the pain and the suffering. And help them have some kind of a grid to work through that. And so the sooner we can do that, because through you're not playing enough, you're not playing a lot, or that friend called you a name, or you had to go to bed early because you didn't do your chores, or whatever small little thing that you and I can laugh about that little kids think are big, the more we can do that now and allow that struggle to occur in their life, the better they're prepared when they get bigger and more important, you know, for you. I mean, this conversation should be flipped right now, and I should be talking to you about how do you process struggle and suffering. And your listeners should know that. I mean, they probably do, or they wouldn't be listening to you because they know your story. But someday you ought to be on the other side of this thing and answer some of those questions for your listeners about how did you do that, and then how does that translate to your own parenting of your children.
Yeah, Jenny and I talk about that we were raised I'd walked through nothing. Like going into college, like if you weighed the hard things I'd walked through, it would have been setting the bench in 10th grade. That would have been, you know, it was mm-hmm. sports, and that is why I love sports, cuz mm-hmm. sports create you. Adversity.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like you're going to lose.
Yeah.
You're going to miss.
Yeah.
You know, Anders is going to strike out. I love it.
Yeah.
And I think that's the one thing that what we have walked through I long for my kids to struggle while they're under my roof.
Yeah.
And I don't think I ever would have said that sentence before having lost Elliot. Mm. And because I look back and I'm like, I guess my parents did a good job. I never walked through anything. I don't know that was their stated goal. Mm-hmm. And it's not like I'm creating things in my kids' lives where they'll really struggle, but as they do, I don't want to rescue them from it. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the tendency that I have. I have the tendency to like, I can fix this for mm-hmm. you. Like I'll make it right. Mm-hmm. You know? I want them, I'll talk to the coach. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll talk to the coach and then we'll figure it out. And even if you're sitting the bench, he'll come and tell you why. And now you feel fine about yourself and mm-hmm. put a medallion on and call yourself good. You know, mm-hmm. that is very natural to me to rescue, to mm-hmm. hover. But I do long for the very thing that you're describing, which is I want to take about 3 steps back, you know, and I'm still there, mm-hmm. whatever right. it is. If I need to, right. if I need to intervene, I can intervene.
Right.
But odds are I don't. And I do want to prepare my kids that, because I think the unstated thing as we look at our faith is that if I, as a parent, if I'm always intervening and rescuing, then, you know, not that I'm got a God complex so big that I think that my kids think I'm God, but that I think I shape what they think about God. Mm-hmm. So what about when God doesn't step in and rescue you?
Yeah, you do.
And that's our story. You know, mm-hmm. our story is God didn't do what we wanted him to do. Mm-hmm. He didn't rescue. He didn't step in. He didn't intervene in the way we wanted it to.
Yeah.
Am I still okay? Am I going to make it? Is he still good? Okay. So how do you... Kyle, as you've walked through that, and we've actually talked about this a little bit, this stage of life, you mentioned, I'm a parent still, I'm a grandparent, have in-laws, or have son-in-law, daughter-in-law. Where you're at now in life, how is it that you live out that one thing? How is it that your family shapes the way that you, the family that you grew up in, shapes the family that you have now and the life that you're living now?
Yeah. You know, honestly, my dad's in a, you know, he's in a assisted living, so he doesn't really get out of there and he can't, but he did for so long. I mean, they had 26 grandkids. And so family was huge to us. In fact, when he was probably about 60, took a second mortgage out, bought some land, built a cabin, called it the family place. And as the older children were kind of separating and spreading out and getting married and having children, he maintained a anchor for his family that we could all come back to and gather and be reminded of this rich legacy of commitment and perseverance and love and family and all, you know, all sacrifice, all those things that we grew up with. And so, I think if someone could look at what I came from and now what I'm living in, I think they would probably go, you just recycled where you came from. And if that were the case, if that were true, you know, I'm satisfied with my life. You know what I've done career-wise, and I've been through some of those change the world positions and visions and missions, and I don't regret any of that, but there was one that always superseded the rest of them. In fact, I remember getting bad reviews, Matt, from my supervisors because I wouldn't travel more than I did. They wanted me to. And I wouldn't, because my number one mission was the people in that home, and that was what I was committed to. And I know not everybody has the freedoms to do that and all that, but I happened to at the time, and I could make those choices and live with a job review that said, well, you weren't excellent because you didn't get out and travel more to our constituents. And even though I walked away kind of disappointed, I also walked away kind of affirmed that you lived by your conviction, and it's a trade-off a lot of times. You have to be willing to accept maybe not the job promotion or the higher salary or, you know, the perception that people might have of you or the status because you had a priority system and you had convictions that you lived by. And so... But I do know that there's something to me and my wife's commitment to over 30 years of marriage and living day in and day out committed to each other, even at times when you don't always feel like it or those negative, you know, vibes come up in your relationship. you just kind of look at each other and go, till death do we part. It's what we said. It's what we meant. It's what we're going to do. Till death do we part. And so we just keep going. And what we don't always know is the blessing that comes from that. You know, kids grow up maybe a little more secure and a little more self-aware or self-assured or confident or not maybe, but usually yes, because they didn't suffer through a lot of family brokenness or that kind of thing. And so I don't have good answers for why me and why not somebody else. I'm just really blessed. And that model was really significant. And because it was to me, I've chosen to try my best to be that model and repeat that.
Well, I just want to ask you, just a few questions based upon kind of what you've told us. One is, this may or may not be a difficult question, I'm a single mom, I'm listening to this and I'm hearing how your intact family, mm-hmm. that everyday routine, mm-hmm. that I guess all the things that maybe I feel like I'm not able to provide mm-hmm. In the situation that I'm in. What is your piece of advice for the one thing in your life that meant so much that they could put into practice or that mm-hmm. they could? So if single mom is just an example of like, hey, my life doesn't look like that.
Yeah.
And I like what you're saying, but what does it mean for me?
Yeah. So one of the ways I would choose to answer that, Matt, is, you know, throughout my life and my work, you come across all different kinds of people. And to some people, you know, there might be an extension of more grace given because I get to know them and I know their story. And there's that intuitive sense that you really need some grace. And to other people, I may withhold some grace because I get to know them and I hear their story and I intuitively kind of think, you know, maybe you need some more accountability in your life. And not at all, I don't have a God complex at all, but I've been in leadership positions. But I'm not so sure God doesn't see the world and people similarly. And so the first thing I would say is, some of the great heroes of life are single moms. And I think God does have a portion of grace that he's able to look at some of those fighters out there called single moms and extend that to them. And so they're in a position to be able to receive something that God has for them that a lot of people aren't allowed to be able to receive, because of the unique situation that they found themselves in. And so first I would hope that they would lean into that and not allow their circumstances to turn them into angry and frustrated and resentful people, but to maybe open their eyes and see the grace that God has for them and then move forward. And then the second thing, and you beat me to it. The second thing I would say is to really be intentional with what you have been given, you know, to not look at that and spend all your time sulking that I'm single with these children. And so I'm going to have some pity for myself because no one will ever, you know, accuse me and they end up how they end up. To that, I would go, no, don't do that. You know, embrace the grace that God has for you, and then be intentional with your kids and let them learn about a life that is just magical, that it can be. And we all know people like that. We know single moms that have lived that way. We know people that have come from single moms who did an amazing job that are very healthy and flourish in that way. Unfortunately, the opposite is very true too. You know, we get a little bit too self-consumed with our impoverished position sometimes, and the outcome is the people around us have to experience the residual effect of that, and slowly that legacy starts to go a different direction. And so, like it or not, you know, I told you my story is one of legacy. We're all a part of a legacy. You know, what it looks like is dictated by where you come from and what you try to leave. But legacy is about what we're all about.
Well, there you have it, folks. Thank you for listening, and thank you to Kyle Unruh for coming on and telling us the one thing. You've been listening to The Atypical Podcast with Matt and Jenny Mooney. This is our series called The One Thing. We will have a season full of people talking about the one thing in their life that changed their life, that changed the trajectory, that most influenced the person that they are today. We hope that you enjoyed this series as much as we are. As always, you can find show notes and links at theatypicallife.com. Have a great week. We love you. Well, what people can't tell out there is that you've sweated through this interview with me, because we have to turn the air conditioner off so we don't hear it, and it's a little warm today. So thank you very much, Kyle. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Is there anything we didn't touch on that you want to touch on?
No, but I want to say something.
Yeah.
And I run the risk of you editing this out.
Because, my confidence comes from my edit.
Well, I hope you won't, because I want your listeners to hear this. You know, I was one of the few, maybe not few, but I think probably few, that got to meet Elliot. And I don't know if you remember that day. I still do remember that day. And I remember being greatly impacted just by looking at him and going, man, he is so frail. And he had all that stuff coming out of his tubes and all that stuff coming out of his body. And I'm like, man, I didn't know the outcome then. I just knew you had a baby and he was struggling, and I was coming through Fayetteville, and I cared about you and Jenny, and I was going to come meet this kid. And so every time, ever since he passed, Matt, I can't see you or talk to you or Jenny or follow something you say on Facebook and not think about Elliot. And I'm probably unique in the sense that I got to meet him. So that's why I think that way. But I want you to know, and I want your listeners to know, hopefully, that your gift with words and the way you sequence words speaks to a lot of people's hearts. I've read things you've said and thought, man, that's exactly what I'm thinking or what I'm feeling, but I don't have the ability to order the words to communicate it that way. And so I just really want to applaud you and thank you for your willingness to kind of go out on this vision and this mission. I know it's not easy. And every day you're reminded of that cute little guy because of your mission. And I just want to encourage you to stay the course and keep fighting. I've never told you this stuff, so you would have not known that Kyle reads my words and he processes them and impacts them. But I do want you to know that. And I really want other people to know that too. So that's my kind of closing comment, that you won't edit me out at the end of this thing. So,
well, I have a way of doing what you tell me. You have that. You also have that influence. I'll just do it. I really appreciate that. That means a lot to me. So thank you. Our music today was provided by Paddington Bear and Scott Holmes. If you're looking for Jenny, don't worry. She's still around. She's still a part of the podcast, a vital part, I would say. However, the kids are home. We've just returned from vacation, and so she will be popping in and out of this series as she is able. Thanks for caring.